Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the second year in a row.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
Welcome back. It's 34 After. Mr. Wonderful here at your service. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there, and you'll be able to get the big start getting the series on New Year's resolutions, the fundamentals that I'm encouraging you and me to practice this year. And so I encourage you to do that at jbsba.com. Richard DeKayser is our guest. He's Executive Vice President, Senior Vice President, and Chief Economist at the National City Bank Corp in Cleveland, Ohio, as the banks all over the Midwest, and he's one of our top economic experts. Richard, welcome back to the show.
Good morning, Jim. It's good to be here.
It's good to have you back, as always. And as you know, and as my audience knows, this is our Fed Watch show. The Fed is meeting today and tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is the day when they will announce their decision on what to do about rates. I made a prediction, Richard, the first of the year. One of my predictions that I made, one of about 20 or so, 18 or so, was that the Fed would continue to raise rates every time until the Fed funds rate was at least a half a point above the inflation rate. What do you think?
I agree. The inflation rate, you know, actually the inflation rate now is running about almost 3.5%.
Is that right? I didn't know
it
was that high.
Yeah, but that's because we've had this tremendous oil price inflation, which most people, including myself, expect to reverse. But even if you strip that away, you look at the underlying rate of inflation, it's 2.25. So your formula then would say that the Fed's going to get to 2.75 before they take a pause. And I completely agree. At today's meeting, they're likely to go from 2.25 to 2.5, and they meet again in March, which will put you right on target. And the reason, you know, there's actually a lot of theory that backs up your thinking, even if you weren't putting it in these terms, which is that historically, the federal funds rate, that is the rate that banks charge each other overnight, has averaged about 2 points over inflation. Mm-hmm. So we've been in negative territory in that respect for some time now.
We've been upside down in that way. That was exactly the point that I made, is that that we've been upside down with regard to Fed funds and inflation rate, and that's not something that the Fed wants.
That's right, which is exactly why I try and encourage people to look at what's going on now, not really as a return to high interest rates, because we're not, but a renormalization, that is getting back to what are historic norms after what has been an unusual period in history. So, but for your listeners, nonetheless, I think it's important to keep in mind that we've still got a ways to go and that they should adjust their financing with that expectation.
Well, the point that I was trying to make was if you have any opportunity to fix it, to lock in some rates, you need to go ahead and do it. And if you've got floating debt out there that is floating on the market, you need to be prepared for higher rates in your budget.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. And speaking of petroleum, you know, I remember when I've met in years past with members of the Fed, you know, we would have these spikes in the oil, and they'd say, oh, you know, we're not dialing that into inflation because we think that's going to come down. It hasn't been coming down. And I also predicted that we would average above $40 a barrel oil in 2005. What do you think?
Well, I think we're going to part company, and I wouldn't rule this out, because oil prices are a tricky business, and they've been proving the best forecasters wrong in the past year. But here's my view, is that what happened in 2004 was a big surprise. The global economy took off. The IMF says it was the strongest year in three decades. No one saw it coming, including oil producers. So we had this mismatch. We had strong global growth in the context of expectations for weak global growth. Mm-hmm. And what happened is that demand for crude drove down inventories, drove up prices, and that's where we find ourselves at the start of this year. Now, my own expectation...
Can I stop you for a second and brag on you a little bit?
Okay.
Three months, folks, before you heard it anywhere else on this show, Richard DeKayser said that the price of oil is about to be underpinned not so much by demand, but more by speculation. And months later, you started hearing that, and you heard it first on this show from Mr. Richard DeCaser.
I appreciate that, Jim. But for those reasons, I think that there was a lot of speculative pressure in 2004, and still lingers to this day. But the oil industry is working furiously. They are increasing exploration, increasing extraction. Saudi Arabia is putting up 75 new derricks.
But they're having to go deeper now.
Oh yeah,
for that oil, and that means it's more expensive.
It's deeper. It's more expensive, but it's not twice as expensive. So when I say oil prices should decline, I'm not saying back to the 20s or the 90s.
Right.
But
you think
maybe
below
$10. I think below 40.
Yeah, okay. Well, we shall see. Stand by. Okay. Right back with Mr. Richard DeCaser, Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at National City Bank Corp. 22. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
With the old man stranded again, so off I'd ran. A young world crashing around me. No possibility of getting what I need. He looked at me and smiled.
We're back at 17 till.
No,
I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, having a great visit with our good friend Richard DeCaser with the National City Bank. And Richard, give us your website, please.
Very simple, nationalcity.com. And if you want and append / economics on that, you'll get to my department's website.
And can we find your financial market outlook there, too?
You may certainly do that, and in fact, you may register online for email distribution.
I encourage you to subscribe to that outstanding publication that Richard puts out once a month. And Richard, thank you for making that available to my audience. It's an outstanding document. It'll help you folks, especially with your outlook for your business, especially with your budgeting. You kind of see what's going on out there in the marketplace. It's an outstanding document. Richard, I predicted last year that the economy would I was a little exuberant, irrationally probably, that the economy would do about 5%. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people, I didn't see the oil thing coming.
Right.
And I've been told that the oil price shock, the oil tax, cost us a whole point. We're going to wind up with about 4% growth last year, which was a tremendous year when you think about it. But what do you think about 2005? What's going to be the outlook for that?
Well, I'm pretty optimistic with respect to 2005. You know, I recently got together with about 10 other economists. We prepared a forecast that we submit to and present to the Federal Reserve twice each year. And the range was remarkably narrow. I was the optimist at 4% GDP growth. The pessimist was at 3%, and the other 9 fell in between.
Wow. So
that's pretty
tight, isn't it?
It is a very tight range. Usually you can break us into optimists and pessimists, but this was a true consensus forecast.
Did you think that 2004 would be better than 4% growth?
Sure, yeah. Actually, my forecast at this time last year was that 2004 would look like 4.8% GDP growth. Mm-hmm. The actual number as it stands now is 4.4, and I agree, without putting too fine a point on it. The spike in oil subtracted somewhere between a half and a full percent, so it probably would have come in around 5% if not for this.
If it weren't for that darn oil thing, we'd look like geniuses, wouldn't we?
Well, you're right, but you can't do that. I mean, that's when you forecast, you can't say except for this, except for that.
Yeah. I was hoping to be able to do that. Okay. Yeah. Well, so what are you excited about in 2005?
Well, you know, it's unfortunate that this is not a new event, but really the big story of what 2005 is going to be about is very much what 2004 was about, in the sense that business investment was strong. It was the lead sector in the economy last year, growing about 10%, and you know, relative to this 4.4% for the economy as a whole. And that's likely to continue, because if you think about it, interest rates still are low, and even if the Fed keeps banging away at things all year long, will on average be low over the course of the year.
Nothing
any of us can handle. That's good. You know, credit is very readily available. Lenders are competing very aggressively for business, so that's even shaving some of the interest rate charges off of what is their cost of funds.
Mm-hmm.
And number three, we've got a very healthy growth in utilization rates, which simply means that factories are operating at higher rates, office buildings and industrial properties are operating at higher rates, and all this means that the incentive for businesses to continue to invest to either maintain or expand those properties is strong. So I think business investment is going to continue to be the story and the economic forecast for this year.
Isn't part of our fortune now a benefit derived from having been our businesses that have survived, that survived 2001, 2, and 3, 2000, I should say, all the way through 2003, that those businesses survived were hardened in those in that crucible of hard times, and now really did learn how to operate their businesses more efficiently, and the ones that have survived have good business models. Isn't that kind of where we are right now?
That is absolutely true. It is always the case of business cycles. Recessions and periods of weak growth tend to clear the field of the weaker players. And, you know, here in the Midwest in particular, the manufacturing sector was especially hard hit. Foreign competition was especially intense. So what you see now is that the businesses left standing are those that have weathered the storm, so to speak, and are actually would have been the stronger performers in their peer groups at this time. So, yeah, to be sure, the field has been winnowed, and it's the strong that remain.
Give us your expert opinion on the dollar. The dollar, as we all know, has been devalued in a good bit and is down against a lot of currencies.
Right.
Unfortunately, not against the yuan, but what are your thoughts on the dollar?
Well, you've taken me to the most unwelcome area of economic forecasting, which is foreign exchange rates, and the reason is good because even if you totally understand what's happening in the United States, you have to have a completely commensurate understanding of every other country in order to really nail
this one. It's the action and opposite reaction thing, isn't it?
Well, it is, but I'll tell you, in my view, the dollar is going to decline further, and the reason being that we've got a number of financial issues on the table, Social Security reform, tax reform, and many of these issues address the fact that the U.S. economy has prospectively fairly large deficits. And unless we make some real traction on solving these problems, and to the president's credit, he has elevated these to the top of his to-do list. But until they're checked off the to-do list, I think foreign investors are going to be somewhat wary of buying U.S. assets, and that'll add weakness to the dollar. But I want to emphasize, this is not intrinsically bad news.
They're buying our goods.
Well, they are buying our goods, but for our domestic companies who have been, and you need to remember, back in the second half of the 90s and the first few years of this decade, U.S. businesses were confronting extraordinarily difficult foreign competition. The dollar was very strong. That made our goods very expensive overseas. Imports cheap here.
Not to mention tariffs.
Oh, absolutely.
A lot of those
right.
things. It made it very tough for us to compete. I want you to finish that thought when we come back after these messages. And then I'm going to ask you what you think about specifically small businesses in 2005. It's 10 Till. We'll be right back with Mr. Richard DeKayser. He's with National City Bank. We're back at 7 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame, a small business advocate, and having a great visit with our good friend Richard DeKayser, the Senior Vice President and Chief Economist at National City Bank. Richard, tell us a little bit about National City.
Sure. National City is the 10th biggest bank in America, resident in Ohio, in Cleveland in particular, but extending from Michigan and Illinois in the north down to Kentucky and Missouri in the south, and from Pennsylvania in the east across to Indiana in the west and Illinois.
All right.
So it's a seven-state area, but we are the biggest small business lender in half those states and have many operations nationwide, especially mortgage
lending.
You do a lot of
SBA loans, I know.
That's right. It's a number one SBA lender in four, actually, of those seven states that we occupy. So it's it's a core competency of the company and something that we take pride in.
Absolutely. Well, good for you. And give us that website again, please.
www.nationalcity.com.
All right.
Thank you.
Richard, in the 21st century, small businesses, what I've been saying, and I believe this with all my heart, is that in the 20th century, small businesses were kind of backwater mom and pops. If we did business with big companies, we were just vendors into a local plant or something like that. But in the 21st century, small businesses are big business partners. And that's one of the reasons I'm excited about the 21st century. And I believe 2005 is going to amplify that what I just said more than any other year in the past. What do you think?
Well, I think small business, yes, I agree. What large corporations have been doing in recent years in growing number is recognizing their strengths, being their core competency, trying to focus on the things they do best, not trying to be all things to all people. And that means contracting out, in many cases, businesses that are not in their core competency mm-hmm. to others. And I don't think that trend is anywhere near to close.
And outsourcing is the best thing that ever happened to small business, isn't it?
Well, you know, I hate the word outsourcing because it has so many meanings, but you just used it in what was the traditional, accurate meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's taken on international connotations. But, no, outsourcing has been a wonderful thing for small business. And if we look at the record so far, small business has been outperforming larger businesses over the course of the past year. If we look, for example, at borrowing, that's a good barometer. Small business borrowing has been much stronger than large corporate borrowing. If we look at the sense of the community, for example, the small business optimism as measured by the National Federation for Independent Business
mm-hmm.
Actually hit a record high in the fourth
right.
quarter of 2004, and large business optimism measures are also quite high, but nowhere near an all-time record. So you're seeing this mix in the business community, which is unusual. Usually there's, you know, very minor differences, if any at all, but we have seen this emerging schism over the past year or so in the favor of small businesses.
Do you see small businesses doing a better job with their financial reporting? Do you have any perspective on that at all?
Well, I think in terms of the accuracy,
making sure that they have good financial numbers and that sort of thing. Are you seeing that at all?
Well, small business, two comments. Number one, small business financial reporting has generally gotten much, much better in large part because of the various services and software that they have available.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be that only large businesses could tap the best expertise in accounting, and for those who were on their own, it was a nightmare. So I think just technology has changed to make their reporting far, far better than ever before. The other issue, which really is much, much murkier, is the veracity of reporting. What I'm referring here to is the corporate governance scandals, the whole aftermath,
mm-hmm.
Sarbanes-Oxley,
mm-hmm.
and what that may have had in terms of its influence. And this is, as I said, a murkier area. It's hard to be definitive, but it seems like the whole process of having business leaders being convicted, if not tried, if not convicted,
mm-hmm.
has had a salutary effect. People are, I think, thinking twice, being more careful, trying to do the right thing. So I also believe that, though I can't prove this, and that we're seeing much more honest financial reporting now than we've seen in a long time.
Richard, I want to remind my audience that your document that you produce once a month, Financial Market Outlook, is available at the National City website. Give us that website again, including the slash, where we can go to get your
document. www.nationalcity.com and then /economics. There's actually a couple publications, Financial Market Outlook, for those who want to keep abreast of national issues, and also new publication, The Region, for those in the industrial Midwest.
Thank you very much, Richard, for being here today. Good job.
My pleasure.
See you next time.
Take care, Jim.
And we both believe that the Fed will raise rates today, so you can count on that, I guess. Got to go for this hour. I'm Jim Blassingame. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.